is Wake Up Call on the Sports Map Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, thanks for joining us. Jared Dubin on a Progressive guest line, NBA analyst, friend of the show. Progressive drivers who switch and save with Progressive save nearly $700 on average. Again, we've got two game fours tonight in New York and Miami. We've also got Golden State and the Lakers. But then we had two games yesterday where James Harden and the Sixers evened up that series. And then Booker and Durant held off Jokic and the Nuggets to even up that series. So there's a lot going on in the NBA playoffs. How are you, Jared?
I'm doing fine. How are you?
What did you make of this series now with Phoenix and Denver? The kind of performances that Phoenix got, the kind of performance Jokic gave Denver, where do you see this series now knotted up at two?
I think I'm not quite as worried about Denver as some other people seem to be right now. If you look at exactly what it took from Booker especially and then KD as well, just for the Suns to, you know, be competitive and win those games. I mean, Booker right now, I mean, I had it this morning. He's averaging 36.8 points in the playoffs, 62% from the field, 51% from three, 87% from the line. The last two games, he's over 80% from the field. And that's all been 100% needed for them to win these games. And even last night, Denver was still just like a bad Michael Porter shooting game away from being able to win. If he makes, you know, another three or two, they win that game last night, as opposed to going whatever he was, like 2-for-9 from deep, which, you know, he's one of the best shooters in the league. You don't normally see that. So they're asking so much of these two guys, and it's not every night that you're going to get Landry Shamet making 5 threes to make up for it.
We saw the Phoenix Suns owner. He doesn't want anything to happen to Jokic. Do you think Silver will not do anything with that incident over in the corner of the court last night?
I mean, I hope he doesn't.
Yeah, I'm with you. We're with you on that one, definitely. But that being said, how has Monty Williams? I mean, like you say, you rely on this, but sometimes you don't expect it. But is he making the right adjustments that Chris Paul, with Chris Paul being out?
Well, I think the biggest thing he's done is shift more of the ball handling responsibility over to Booker. He's had the ball in his hands 40% of the time that the Suns have been on offense over these last two games, which is just like an astronomical number, and he's essentially playing point guard. I mean, he had, what was it, 12 assists last night, and these aren't just passes that he's, a swing around the perimeter and an easy jumper. He's making the right reads, drawing defense, reading the defense, and flinging the ball to exactly where it's supposed to go, and that's been a really good adjustment for them. And then otherwise, you know, in the spots other than Booker and KD, right now he's essentially just searching for the guys that are going to play well for however long they're on the court. You know, Ayton hasn't been safe on the court. Jock Landale's gotten a whole bunch of minutes these last two games. Campaign hasn't done much out there. Like, he's just cycling through all these different guys they have off the bench and trying to find anything that works for a short period of time.
All right, likewise in the situation that happened also yesterday with Boston and Philadelphia, a lot of people love what they see from James Harden, but there's been a lot of sort of Monday morning quarterbacking here with what Boston didn't do. Do you think that there is a way, that the same way you talk about you give it everything and you're just a mistake or two away from Denver from winning that, do you say the same thing about Boston? A defensive stop here, Jaylen Brown going to the corner, too much time taken by Jason Tatum. Do those work in the same way a Michael Porter shooting night didn't help Denver?
Somewhat. I think we've now seen four games in that series. Two games, James Harden has been like out of his mind good, and the Sixers won those two games. Two games, he's been out of his mind bad, and the Celtics won those two games. I want to see what happens when Harden has, like, you know, just a regular James Harden style game and isn't making 75% of his shots or 25%. Of his shots. That's going to be, you know, obviously, I think, what determines what goes down in these next few games. And I think the big thing is you saw how tired Embiid was down the stretch of the last two games. Being able to steal him more minutes than they have been on the bench over these first four games, or sorry, the first three games that he's played because he was out for game one, I think is important. But they, like, completely collapse every time he's off the court, for the most part, in games two and three. And then, you know, yesterday was the first time that Harden was able to pick up that slack when Embiid has actually been on the court. So it's a really tough balance to strike for Philly.
In the next possibly three games, we'll see how this series goes, but at least the next two, Is it James Harden now, or is it still, are the Sixers still going to win this series with Joel Embiid?
I don't think they can win it without Embiid, just because basically the only way they can get stops right now is if Embiid blocks a shot at the rim. So, you know, just from that sense, they need him out there, and they need him to be, you know, the dominant player he was for, you know, the significant portion of this season. And I think that the way James played yesterday, where, I mean, the big thing for me, that game-winning shot he hit in the corner, finally he's willing to just take a catch-and-shoot jumper when Embiid kicks it out to him. That's been a big, big issue for him going back years now to his time in Houston, where he always had the ball in his hands, and he just got so uncomfortable taking catch-and-shoot jumpers. And it was an issue for, you know, the first like year and a half that he's been there with Embiid. He just wouldn't do it. He'd catch the ball and go into his, you know, dribble and step-back routine. Finally, over the past couple months, he's been much more willing to shoot off the catch. And when he does that, it just opens up so many different things for their offense. And that opportunity is created because so much attention has to be paid to Embiid.
Let's go to the Lakers in Golden State. That'll be game four tonight. First game, Golden State makes a comeback to get to a point where they could, you know, where Jordan Poole has got a shot at the end. But these last two games, it's been 30 points, 27 points. And I get it. Sometimes a game gets away from you. You sort of go, all right, we're out. And then the final score, it wasn't really indicative of where you were a quarter ago. But that being said, what do you make of the dominance of one team against another in those two games?
In game three, it was basically just Anthony Davis was by far the best player on the court, the same way that he was in game one. And when he dominates so completely like that, it's just really hard for Golden State to get anything going offensively right now due to the lack of spacing that they have with a lot of their lineups, or, you know, around Steph and Clay. And Golden State, obviously, we've seen they can blow teams out whenever they're hitting their shots. And that was what they did in game two. The Lakers put two on the ball a lot of times when Steph was coming around the screens, which Golden State ran a lot more of in game two than they did in game one, and they were making the right plays and guys were hitting their shots. So, I mean, a lot of it just comes down to who's going to make their threes in terms of like whether or not a game is a blowout. And then can Anthony Davis both be on the floor for like 45 minutes like he was in game one and on track to be in game three? And can he be, you know, as dominant as he was in those two games during that time when he's on the court?
All right, so Miami, and let's get to the Miami-New York series. What has been Jimmy Butler? What did you make of him in game three over the weekend?
Jimmy's so good, man.
It's
like we do this routine with him every year where the regular season we're like, Jimmy Butler, he's out a bunch of the time. Like, can you count on him that much? He doesn't shoot threes. Like, what is he doing? We always see him do it in the playoffs, and he just refuses to do it during the regular season for some reason. And then the playoffs roll back around, and he's doing this crazy stuff that he does every single year in April and May. And, I mean, the guy is just outrageous. And I really like the adjustment that Eric Spoelstra made last game of taking him off Jalen Brunson and putting him on R.J. Barrett, because a lot of what the Knicks had been doing early in the last couple games was going to Barrett against Gabe Vincent early on and sort of getting him going and bending the defense a little bit away from Brunson and Randle, and that completely shut that down early in game three, and it threw the Knicks offense off for the rest of the game.
I'm curious your thought. What Julius Randle, how important is he important to the Knicks or not? I mean, when he comes back, there seems to be this feeling like, oh, great, they got him back from the injury, then he doesn't play well, didn't play well in game three. Is he a valuable, important cog in this wheel, or can Jalen Brunson do it all?
I mean, I think he's important just because you need more than one guy that can create shots for himself and others. And especially now that Emmanuel Quickley's hurt, who's been the guy that can do that for them off the bench, they really only have two guys that can do that right now, and one of them is Randle. That said, he does have, you know, some obvious weaknesses in his game that have been exploited by playoff opponents in the only three playoff series that he's played in his career so far. Obviously, the two that he's played in this year, he's been playing hurt and pretty significantly. Like, it was a surprise, I think, that he came back from the ankle injury as early as he did, and then he suffers another one and is back again. And I don't think he even missed game one. But it's difficult, obviously, to play through, especially when you're a guy who counts so much on being able to individually create, and you can't push off and explode as easily as he used to, and that's one of his biggest strengths. So it's difficult for him to be the guy he usually is, but you know, we also saw him struggle in the playoffs 2 years ago. Yep. So it's not like this is new.
Jared, always good talking to you, my friend. Thank you so much. We'll catch up soon. Thanks a lot.
Thanks for having me. Have a good day.
You got it. NBA analyst Jared Dubin on the playoffs again. Two game fours tonight, and if we get an even series with those two as well, meaning the Knicks win tonight, meaning Golden State wins tonight. Both teams are on the road. We have good semifinal matchups in the conferences. All right, Tony D, Ron Culver, as we continue, it's Wake Up Call.